Hello, everybody. Welcome back to North Idaho Now. This is episode 61 for August 31st, coming in just before September. Chance Watson and Josh McDonald bring you the news today. Coming in on, what is this, Labor Day weekend?
Upcoming Labor Day weekend.
Yeah, upcoming Labor Day weekend. Josh, who's sponsoring us today?
This episode is brought to you by the Silver Corner Bar. While Wallace is known for the last working stoplight on I-90 between Seattle and Boston, it wasn't the only red light in town. Did you know historic Wallace's famed Silver Corner Bar sits beneath an old brothel? The Lux Rooms Airbnb lets you step back in time and experience the history of the former bordello. The two-story brick building has been converted into a boutique hotel rooms. The bordello operated illegally, yet openly, for nearly a century before closing in 1989. Stop in and say hello. Rooms named after the girls like Barb, Frenchie, Cha-Cha, and Ginger offer a perfect spot for a unique and romantic getaway. This message was brought to you by the Wallace Women's Temperance Guild, fighting to rid Wallace of the evils of the drink, one minor at a time.
I appreciate her ads from the Silver Corner.
You know, Jocelyn, I prefer these definitely over the wine tasting ads that they give us when it's like a oral gymnastics for me to figure out how to say these words. I don't know how to pronounce.
Speaking of, how in-depth is that experience of the history of the former bordello?
I mean, it says it's romantic. So if I go stay there alone, like... Is it romantic for everyone?
Or a little Wallace humor right there.
If you go by yourself, do you leave by yourself? Do you stay by yourself?
What happens at the Lux Rooms?
Stays at the Lux Rooms. Oh, boy.
I've never been to Wallace. as the old bumper stickers.
Say.
Those are both before our time. But
said every 50-plus men who lives in the panhandle. I've never been to Wallace.
Never been there.
What? Never been there.
I don't even know what that place is.
Yeah. Okay.
Uh-huh.
Oh, boy.
So, Labor Day weekend, Josh.
Celebrating labor unions and their win over evil corporations.
Yes.
Do you have any plans to celebrate?
I don't have... Memorial Day and Labor Day weekend generally are weekends that it's either the first hurrah of camping season, the last hurrah of camping season. Because of that, I genuinely try to avoid the outdoors because it's not the outdoors anymore. It's the city that's moved to the country for 3 days.
I avoid the outdoors year round.
I know you do year round. You don't like going outside.
I don't know. I don't not like going outside.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like trees and mountains and dirt.
The things that you have lived around your entire life.
Correct.
Okay. Got it. I suppose I can, while I don't hate them, I'm a person who can go out to like Montana or something and respect and appreciate like just openness. Just open field and blue sky.
I don't mind open fields.
See, that's why I can appreciate that because like
but I
grew up
hated Nevada too. Like,
well, Nevada's a desert. That's different. Yes, it's openness and blue sky, but it's also
it's sky.
Death.
So I say it's blue.
But okay, there you
sage.
Go.
Replace the sage with grass.
Like the open fields. Open fields in Washington, you know, or something like that.
That is the worst drive of all time.
Well, it's not. Yeah, it's not scenic,
monotonous.
It's calming. It's nice.
It's not calming.
Okay.
Wow. It is a spot.
Okay, what biome do you like, Josh?
What geographical let's see here. I can appreciate
I think you're just a curmudgeon who hates all of them.
I really like the aesthetic of downtown Coeur d'Alene.
That's a city.
But that is trees. I like maple trees, oak trees.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like pine trees. I'm allergic
to them. So you're moving to Canada or Vermont?
I mean, Canada just has just as many pine trees.
Sure.
It just happens that they have some maple trees that ended up on a flag, but
that also produce deliciousness.
Right. But I would say my perfect setting mm-hmm. would be a hollow in Georgia.
The humidity.
No, alone. We are not talking about the climate.
Okay.
Because we never once said that going outside here, whether it was hot or cold.
See, that's why not to be a homer on this, but I think that North Idaho has the perfect blend. What natural disasters do we have regularly? Exactly. We don't worry about tornadoes or hurricanes.
I had a really good joke there, but I
was lined up, but you just couldn't do it.
I swallowed it.
That's fair. Okay. Other than the occasional, you know, every 100 years we've got a volcano that erupts.
100 years?
Different. Well, before Mount St. Helens in 1980, it was substantially before that.
I would say
1800s.
I would say put me in the Shire.
Oh, so you're going to like Wales.
The Shire with some green hills and some nice trees and
Wales or Scotland.
The Central Oregon is very similar to the Shire.
Okay.
But no, I'm not a huge proponent of to get anywhere. I have to go over a mountain.
Okay. And as a North Idaho boy, you know, we have a lot of new people coming to the area. And the one of the things that they appreciate the most is the mountains. You see the stickers that say, I love the mountains and like get lost in the mountains. And
I've been lost in the mountains.
Right. You don't appreciate something until it's gone or it's gotta be new for you. You know, as you and I have grown up in these mountains, mountains can sometimes be inconvenient. You can't always drive in a straight line to places. They're always in the way. Or something like that, or it blocks your view of something that you would like to look at. I understand. I get it. But for me, like when I go to, you know, an open farm field or something, like go to the Columbia Basin down there, like for the vineyards and whatnot, I like those. I think they're cool. But I know people that are from Washington that say it's nothing. It's literally nothing. You like nothing. And I go, yeah, it's kind of nice because I've been surrounded by something my entire life.
Give me big, bushy, shady trees,
mm-hmm.
not prickly, the wind hits them, and yellow pollen from the pine needles blows, and it's just...
You're going to New Zealand.
You keep coming up with these remote locations. Yeah. Like I said, Georgia is fine.
Georgia, just, you're not...
Hills,
and I'm sorry, the climate would just ruin it for me.
Yeah, but I'm not talking about the climate.
Okay.
If I could put Georgia's landscape in Idaho's climate, I'd be fine.
Uh-huh.
We also had that friggin' heat wave.
Sure, that exists somewhere, like in the Midwest. Would that be?
No. Have you seen? They called the Midwest the Dust Bowl for a reason.
That was 100 years ago.
It doesn't matter. they called it that for a reason.
And we've lost all of our Midwest listeners now. Actually, you know what? That's a misnomer. East Coasters will call the Midwest like Ohio. And I'm like, that is not the Midwest.
Ohioans believe that they are Midwesterners, though. So,
but that's Midwest when they still thought the continent
Missouri,
wasn't.
Kansas, Nebraska, South Dakota.
Yeah, that's the Midwest.
Maybe
correct.
Illinois and Iowa.
Yeah, that's the Midwest. I would, but yes, that is. But like Columbia, or not Columbia, Ohio, I was thinking Columbus, Columbus, Ohio, Indiana. Like, that's not the Midwest. That's the Mideast.
I would venture to say that the southern portion of Indiana is more Midwestern than their northern counterparts.
Mm-hmm.
But I would also venture to say the southern part of Idaho is more Midwestern than their northern counterparts.
Yes, I would say that. I just think, like, where does West and Midwest begin? Where's the arbitrary line, Josh?
Well, the Memphis Grizzly basketball team plays in the Western Conference while the Chicago Bulls play in the Eastern Conference, and they are diametrically on very, like Memphis is here and Illinois is here.
I'm gonna go off on a limb, though, here and talk about how I don't know if we should use sports teams' conferences as the guiding principle for what is the West and the East, because they draw those lines pretty erratically.
I mean, the Buffalo Bills and the New England Patriots play in the AFC. Oh, no, that's the AFC East. Mm-hmm. It's the Colts that play in the AFC South, and they're from Indianapolis.
Hmm.
I've never been to...
That sounds strange, but yeah. Okay.
Yeah, we are from metropolitan Indianapolis.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah. No. Well, the Arizona Coyotes, they're now moved to the Central Division. They're not even the Pacific Division anymore for hockey. The Kraken kicked them out.
So I would venture to say that, yeah, we shouldn't use sports classifications, but even they can't get it right. And it's their whole job to group people based on the geographical advantages of playing these schedules.
Right.
And they can't even figure it out when it's costing them money. So why are we surprised that...
Right. Like, and I don't go by culture-wise. That would be tougher. Like, Midwest culture goes all the way up to North Idaho. Like, that's not a... That's...
I had a book that talks
about walk through the store and almost run into somebody. Both of them... Oh!
There's a book that I have. And it talks about things Midwesterners love.
Uh-huh.
And you open it up, and it's basically...
Ranch.
Just ranch dressing.
It's just ranch...
Just ranch dressing for everything, and it's not real. It's very accurate.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
But no. It's an odd designation. You say you're a Midwesterner. You really are claiming a lot of.
There's some heritage there.
Oklahomans probably claim themselves as Midwesterners. North Texas people.
Probably Midwest.
I would say they're Midwesterners. But are you a Midwesterner or are you a Texan?
Or are you just a Southerner?
Because Texan's different.
Yeah, sure.
Like,
sure, there's the Southeast, there's Texas. Because Texas is like the dividing line between the South, like there's the Southeast and then there's the Southwest.
Four major states that have, like, if you're from these places, like, you identify as this person.
Mm-hmm.
So a Californian, for better or for worse.
Sure.
A Texan.
Yep.
A Floridian. Because they didn't call them that. They're now just Florida man.
Right.
And you're a New Yorker.
Okay.
I would say that after that, you start getting like, oh, I'm from the Pacific Northwest.
Correct.
I'm from the Midwest. I'm from, I'm from the...
Great Lakes.
The Great Lakes region.
Okay. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I'm a upstate New York.
New England.
New England.
Yeah.
Northeast.
Okay.
And if you're from Louisiana, I'm a Southerner.
Right. Oh, you could even probably throw in Bostonian...
You might, but I mean, they have such a thick accent. But I think even then,
but don't call them a New Yorker.
They would rather they would go by New Englander, before they would go Bostonian.
But, sure, that's fair.
But then I would venture to say that I guess the only other one that you could be that's prominent is your Hawaiian, because there's a very
or Alaskan,
like Hawaiian is like not only from a state, but like Hawaiian is almost it's a nationality.
Mm-hmm.
Like you can be a Hawaiian and like,
right.
I guess a Pacific Islander is what it's referred to now, but you're still Hawaiian.
Okay. I could buy that. Yeah.
But I would.
But those are the states that kind of like separate everybody else.
Yeah.
Because the Southwest is not the Southeast.
Like
two very different cultures.
No. And yeah. If you're from Arizona, you're a Southwesterner. If you're from New Mexico, you're a Southwesterner. If you're from parts of Nevada, you're a Southwesterner. Mm-hmm. But other spots really claim.
It's like that desert cowboy stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Burt Reynolds.
Interesting.
Neil Diamond.
Parts of Clint Eastwood.
Just
parts.
Definitely. Yes, I could see that.
When he was a fistful of dollars, yes. When he was Dirty Harry.
Not when he was Dirty Harry, yeah. Where did Dirty Harry take place? What city was he supposed to be in? Like L.A.?
I think so.
I think he was supposed to be in L.A.
Yeah.
I can't picture him as a New York cop.
Isn't there I think there's a sequel to A Fistful of Dollars called just like A Million More Dollars or something like that.
Something really unclever.
It makes me laugh because like The Fistful of Dollars is a catchy headline, mm-hmm. a catchy title. But then they're like, you know what? A Fistful of Dollars 2 or Two Fistful of Dollars.
Right.
No, we'll just say, you know what? A Million More Dollars.
Right. A Million More Dollars. That makes sense. We'll end on, I think Clint Eastwood's son should pick up the mantle and start making some movies.
Wolverine. He should be Wolverine.
When Hugh Jackman's done?
I mean, he's basically.
Basically is done.
Yeah. He should be Wolverine. And if you don't believe me, Google Scott Eastwood.
Yeah, I think
Wolverine,
that's his name.
And you're welcome.
Interesting. Okay. All right. On that note,
that dude's beautiful.
He is a good,
straight up.
That's a good looking man.
Beautiful.
Yep. Yeah. He's definitely taking care of himself.
Yes.
You could see him in a cowboy movie too, picking up his dad's mantle.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I would like to see him in a cowboy movie where he kills his dad
and
becomes some rugged
interesting crook. like a passing of the torch
yes
situation yes. Okay,
yes,
interesting, like Dirty Harry's
take my money.
Got it. Okay. Well, Josh, have you heard about the Dave Smith adoption program?
Yes.
Because every month, Dave Smith Motors is sponsoring a dog from Shum Pet Rescue and a cat from Silver Valley Cat Wranglers and covering the adoption fees 100%. This month's pets have been adopted.
Yay!
Woo! So stay tuned for next month's Pets of the Month.
Hey-o.
And that moves us into Coeur d'Alene Post Falls Press headlines for Saturday, August 28th.
Headline, COVID-19 case backlog swamps Panhandle Health District. This is by Bill Bewley. The Panhandle Health District announced on Friday a backlog of COVID-19 cases for July and August has created two significant issues. First, when our team is swamped with cases, we are unable to contact everyone who has tested positive for COVID-19, said Don Duffy, Panhandle Health District's interim director. Second, we are only reporting the number of cases processed that day, so the public doesn't see the actual situation. He said that on August 20th, Panhandle Health District reported 36 cases, but in reality, it had over 900 cases left to process.
Mm-hmm.
What? In response, PhD has temporarily mobilized PhD staff away from their current responsibilities to try and quickly eliminate the backlog. PhD blamed the backlog on recent surge in cases, a tight labor market, and demobilization of the National Guard. Quote, it is important for us to be transparent with our community as we know that schools, businesses, and individuals make important decisions based on the information that we provide, Duffy said. PhD reported 366 new coronavirus cases in a four-day stretch from Tuesday through Friday and now has 28,671 total cases with 358 total deaths. Kootenai Health had 94 COVID-19 patients on Friday, with 34 requiring critical care. On Wednesday, it announced it was turning a resource center into a 22-bed patient care center to be ready for an expected increase in COVID-19 patients. Health officials continue to urge people to get vaccinated and wear masks indoors when in crowded places outdoors. They said the vaccine is safe and effective with minimal side effects.
Not much new news there, but I mean, it's still going. It's still here.
You know, and so one of the things that I wanted to make sure I stopped doing early on was like referring to COVID-19 as the coronavirus, mm-hmm. because we've dealt with coronaviruses our entire life.
Mm-hmm. It's a general term.
So we gotta not be this, like, we're dealing with one specific one and now it's specific variant. Mm-hmm. Which I guess COVID-19 is a variant of a coronavirus, but it's a specific variant. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like dog. It's a Great Dane or a pit bull or a Rottweiler or a Chihuahua. Yes. It's like calling a pit bull a dog instead of calling a coronavirus COVID-19.
Right. Yeah.
So I don't know. I that vernacular doesn't sit well with me, but 366 new cases in a four-day stretch from Tuesday through Friday. That would be earlier. That would be last week.
Mm-hmm.
I understand people are frustrated and all this. I know I saw a really interesting cartoon the other day, and it was a guy standing there and he was basically in his underwear and he's got a bunch of arrows in him and the arrows represent COVID. And then there's a guy next to him in a suit of armor and there's one arrow stuck into him, but a bunch falling at his feet. And they're like, see, your vaccine didn't work. Mm. Well, yeah, it still did because
it's not 100%.
It's not 100%. Nothing's foolproof. And I understand if you have allergic reactions, but man, like, help us out. Let's help each other out here. Let's do I dare say do the right thing. But at the end of the day, like, if you're making your decision, like, it's the whole love your neighbor concept,
right?
Like,
well, and
help each other out. And if you're not, if you're trying to be standoffish for sake of being standoffish, like, that really does kind of paint you in an unflattering light.
Sure. Okay. Moving on. Athol land exchange near completion. This is by Madison Hardy. A deal between the state and Idaho Forest Group to trade 400 acres of Panhandle land is near complete, despite a neighboring property owner offering roughly double the asking price. In June 2020, Idaho Forest Group applied to exchange 320 acres of rural timberland in Benoit and Bonner counties with the Idaho Department of Lands. The Coeur d'Alene Lumber Producing Company requested 100 acres of state endowment land adjacent to its Athol mill as a trade. The state plans to finalize the exchange within the next 2 months. Once completed, the 320 acres will become endowment lands. State endowment lands generate revenue to support public schools, universities, the Idaho School for the Deaf and Blind, and state hospitals for mental illness, veterans' homes, juvenile corrections, and prisons. Quote, trading in into 320 acres of mostly productive timberland was the main motivation for this exchange, IDL Real Estate Services Bureau Chief Joshua Perkis said. The Athol land doesn't grow good timber. People dump garbage, vandalize the property, cut down trees, and are running their four-wheelers through it. It creates more management issues and costs the state money. Still, Athol resident Jude Dottie wasn't too keen on what he saw as a shocking low trade in price. Still, Athol resident Judd Dottie wasn't too keen on what he saw as shockingly low trade-in price. According to IDL documents, two firms appraised the parcels at $1.2 million. Dottie owns property south of the endowment land. He told the press that his son, Zach, had attempted to purchase 75 acres of the property for nearly double the state assessed value. Quote, our son offered $2 million for the 75 acres and they wouldn't consider it, Dottie told the press. They sold the whole thing for $1.2 million. Since then, we got an assessment back from a broker that assessed the 75 acres at $2.9 million. In a letter to the state, Zach Dottie said he would have readily outbid Idaho Forest Group if the 100 acres in Athol were sold through public auction. The state does sell land through auction sparingly, Perkis said, notably on lakefront and prime development areas. Land exchanges are relatively common practice for IDL and it often revolves around timberland management. Perkis said Idaho Forest Group approached IDL to initiate the exchange. IDL staff met with county commissioners and private landowners north of Athol parcel. None opposed the trade, agency documents said.
Interesting.
Not going to argue with some land being saved by the Idaho Forest.
Yeah. Moving on to Sunday, August 29th, A Humanitarian Nightmare. This is by Bill Bewley. When Glenn Heap reflects on what's happening in Afghanistan, it's upsetting. Quote, yesterday, I was very mad, he said on Friday. Quote, 13 Marines lost their lives. I just know what that means. That means 13 families' lives were changed forever, and that's the part that really bugs me. That was preventable. Nathaniel Miller of Hayden, sitting next to Heap in an office in Post Falls, is equally dismayed. Quote, August 31st is going to come and go, and we're going to pull out our troops, and there's still going to be people left behind, he said. It's going to be a humanitarian nightmare, not just for American citizens, but for Afghans who helped us. Both men served in the military and spent time in Afghanistan. Heap is a retired Army colonel who served 25 years and was there in 2013. Miller, petty officer second class, spent nearly 6 years in the Navy and was stationed in Afghanistan in 2009 and 2010. Each has been following the situation in Afghanistan. Both expressed alarm at the United States' decision to pull out of the country, and as it turns out, the Taliban took over much quicker than expected and routed the Afghan National Army in a week. After 20 years of U.S. occupation, the Taliban was back in charge. Heap of Post Falls was Lieutenant Colonel Battalion Commander in Afghanistan and led counterterrorism efforts by supporting and training the Afghan National Army. Quote, the plan was for us to build up their capacity and capability for the Afghan Army so we could pull out, he said. The Afghan National Army, he said, was, quote, very capable back then. Quote, but there was a lot of harassment by the Taliban, a lot of engagements. It was still a very dangerous environment, he said. He had 65 aircraft under his command, including 16 Apache helicopters. Quote, my role there was to protect, facilitate the units on the ground. With the Apaches, we provided security, he said. If they got into gunfire, we provided overwatch. He was stunned when he learned the U.S. military abandoned Bagram Air Base in Afghanistan, about 40 miles from Kabul, in July, quote, in the middle of the night without informing its Afghan allies. Quote, immediately I knew this was going in the wrong direction when I heard about us leaving Bagram. That base was amazing. It's bigger than Post Falls. Words, he said, don't matter with the Taliban. Heap said part of the problem with the withdrawal is that naive people are making key decisions. Quote, the way we've treated it is very naive view of Afghan culture and a naive view of the Taliban and their capabilities, he said. He also said that U.S. withdrawal could have been planned better and executed so it would not have been so chaotic with the loss of lives. Miller shared similar thoughts. The U.S. military leaving Bagram in the middle of the night, then leaving Afghanistan as it is now, isn't something he thought we would ever see. Quote, so to see this, yeah, it's insanely disheartening, Miller said. I don't think it represents the United States as a country, and it certainly is a disgrace that our military has been put in this position where they had to abandon their allies.
All right, let's move on to happier things.
Oh, the library.
Monday, August 30th. This library is all about making noise. This is by Ellie Goldman-Hilbert. The process is similar to checking out a library book, except at the instrument library, you can walk out with a tuba. What? That actually sounds kind of cool. The instrument library is a program at the Music Conservatory of Coeur d'Alene. It has violins, three ukuleles, three guitars, a cello, clarinets, and a trumpet that can be loaned for free at the free of cost to its music students. Quote, "We just got a tuba donated," said Monica Tholen, conservatory president. "Tubas are like $10,000.
Dang.
A $75 deposit is taken in return when the instrument is brought back. Tholen said the program solves problems parents can face when a child decides to study music. Parents can spend about $200 monthly on instrument rental and music lessons, she said. That alone is a deterrent for many. Even beginner-level instruments cost several hundred dollars. Tholen said many public school music programs offer access to instruments, but when summer comes, the instrument must be turned in. Allowing student rentals for up to 1 year, the instrument library aims to make sure practice time isn't missed. Quote, "That 20 minutes every day makes a huge difference," Tholen said. Faculty member Marianne Flynn, who teaches French horn, is getting her certification in instrument repair as well, said Conservatory Julian Dance. Instrument repair can be expensive. As part of the program, children are taught proper care and maintenance to hopefully avoid needing instrument repairs. Expanding inventory is one of the many developments of the conservatory. One project in the works is a piano studio. Dance expects to have two upright pianos delivered soon. Dance, the last name of Dance.
Yes.
The conservatory plans to offer a percussion lab and music recording studio and to remodel the basement for more studio space. In addition to needing more instruments to fill the library, the conservatory also takes unwanted broken instruments. The parts are cleaned and used when repairs are needed. To make a donation, call 208-901-8190. Fall semester begins September 7th and registration will open through September 10th.
Moving on to Tuesday, August 31st, It's a 10 by Bill Bewley. The numbers are in and they add up to one thing. The 10-day experiment that was this year's North Idaho State Fair was a smashing success.
I agree.
And yes, look for it again next year. The fair wrapped up Sunday and reported attendance of 154,726, far more than the 97,000 that passed through the gates in 5 days in 2019. Quote, "Isn't that wild?" said Alexia Jordan, the fair general manager and CEO. "I think everybody is really happy with it." Jordan walked from the fair office at the Coonie County Fairgrounds Monday afternoon as crews were packing up for the year. Banners were coming down, booths were taken apart, and bleachers sat empty. What had been full of life with boys and girls and moms and dads and all sorts of critters and creatures since August 20th was nearly deserted. Quote, "This is the sad part, seeing everything taken down," Jordan said. While some questioned whether the fair could sustain crowds over 10 days, it proved it could, averaging more than 15,000 a day, even in the midst of a coronavirus surge. Kelly McShee with the Inland Empire Beekeepers said that they had plenty of people coming through day and night. She gave the presentation several times to excited kids who got to view beehives through glass and search for the queen bee.
I'd love to have Kelly on the show. That'd be cool.
"It was fun, but exhausting. Quote, I felt like I was a tape recorder," she said, smiling. Lisa Houston, another fair superintendent, said it went fantastic. She and others agreed that going to 10 days helped spread out the crowd, eased COVID-19 concerns, and some wore masks, most did not, and let folks feel safe. Jordan was delighted with the turnout and said that while the final decision hasn't been made, it's likely the North Idaho State Fair will be 10 days next year. Quote, "A great way to keep going forward," she said.
I think it's a great idea. I thought it was fantastic. Scheduling wise, it was more for, I know you hate the fair, but it was for me to go. I was able to go twice this year. That was super cool. I missed all the events. That sucked, but I was able to go and enjoy it, and it was a good time. I really liked it.
I think I found another reason why I don't care for fairs.
Why is that?
They're dirty.
Yeah, that's the nature of a fair.
Yeah. So it's expensive and dirty.
You know, for somebody who's from Kellogg, you seriously sound like a city slicker.
Yes.
Okay.
I thrive in that environment.
Okay. That sounds about right.
I don't understand what what you're missing here,
Trey. No, I picked it up a long time ago. Okay. Restore your smile, restore your confidence. Complete Dental Care delivers quality dental care and complete satisfaction with state-of-the-art technology. They guarantee a positive dental experience, a bright smile, and restored confidence. Schedule your appointment today. Call 208-682-4540. Complete Dental Care is located at 418 West Cameron Avenue in Kellogg. To learn more, visit CompleteDentalNW.com. All right, that moves us into Shoshone News Press headlines for August 31st. Headline, manslaughter suspect's home goes up in flames. I wrote this one. The home of a Calder man burned to the ground Monday morning as he sat in the Shoshone County Jail for criminal charges, including vehicular manslaughter. Fire personnel with St. Joe Valley Fire District No. 4 and St. Mary's Fire Department responded to the residence of Richard Elbert Rogers Jr., located at 12 Main Street in Calder, around 8 a.m. after a neighbor reported seeing flames. Shoshone County Sheriff's Office Captain Jeff Lee said that while the flames were contained to the original structure and no injuries were reported, the home itself was declared a total loss. Based on the circumstances surrounding the home's owner and the front porch ignition point, the Idaho State Fire Marshal's office has been asked to investigate the strong possibility of arson. Rogers Jr. was arrested by Idaho State Police in the early morning hours of August 27th after he allegedly ran over and killed a 35-year-old Calder woman in town and fled the scene while under the influence of alcohol. Witnesses to the incident said that the suspect got into a verbal altercation Thursday night with multiple parties regarding the usage of motorized vehicles by juveniles in a certain area. Fueled by heightened emotions and alcohol, Rogers Jr. was said to have brandished a firearm. This is when police were called in the first time. As the St. Joe Region's Shoshone County Sheriff's deputy was en route to Calder, a second call came into dispatch reporting the hit and run. Rogers Jr. fled town and traveled west towards St. Mary's on St. Joe River Road until he parked in a pullout around milepost 21. It was there that Benoit County Sheriff's deputies, who were responding to the call as well, found him unconscious in his truck. Due in part to the complexity of the investigation, the entire case was handed over to ISP for follow-up. Rogers Jr. was initially charged last Friday with driving under the influence, but is now facing charges of vehicular manslaughter and leaving the scene of an accident resulting in the injury or death. Shoshone County Deputy Prosecuting Attorney Ben Allen said that many of the case's specifics are limited due to the active investigation, but he can confirm that two search warrants were carried out. Allen added that following a review of the initial report, the state made the decision to file charges for vehicular manslaughter. Under Idaho Code, manslaughter is defined as the unlawful killing of a human being without malice. In this particular case, when someone is operating a motor vehicle while exercising gross negligence and/or under the influence, that operation is the significant cause that contributes to a death. The maximum penalty for a vehicular manslaughter conviction is a $15,000 fine or 15 years in prison. Allen said that due to the severity of the situation, the state pushed for a hefty bail amount. Quote, although the defendant was a Shoshone County resident, had local ties to the community, and had a very limited criminal history, the state argued for a substantial bond, and the court granted that request and set bond at $100,000. Rogers Jr. could face upgraded and additional charges following a completion of the investigation by ISP detectives. As for the suspected arson case, Lee said the SCSO will be awaiting the results of the fire marshal's investigation. Quote, it's definitely suspicious just based on the circumstances of what has been going on in Calder, he said.
It's a whole lot of action for such a small place.
A little frontier justice there, Josh.
Oof, I don't. Maybe. We'll see. Also in today's Shoshone News Press, gate ignites old controversy in Pine Creek. Whose road is that road? This may be the question of the year, or at least has been a question for the better part of the past 12 months.
Hey, didn't you write this one?
Oh, yeah. Josh McDonald. I'm going to tell you right now, this whole situation has been a labor unlike many I've ever encountered.
A labor of love, Josh?
Because there are
a labor of love,
so
Josh?
So many people. Like, there are big stories that we write, but very rarely are there big stories that we write that have like six official groups that are involved directly or indirectly. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And so we'll talk about it.
Okay,
go ahead. Around this time last year when Pine Creek resident Joe Avery constructed a makeshift blockade at the southern end of Pine Creek Road, and it appears as though he's done it again. Only this time he's installed a much more official-looking gate that was subsequently torn down and then replaced by Avery upon his discovery of it. The real question herein lies with who owns the road beyond Pine Creek Road and after where Avery has placed his multiple blockades. Once it moves past Avery's property, it cuts through a swath of land owned by Hancock Forest Management before cutting back into federally owned lands managed by the Bureau of Land Management. Avery had previously told the news press that he doesn't claim any ownership to the road, but also doesn't believe it to be owned by Shoshone County. He believes that the road is off limits to motorized vehicles of all sizes. Shoshone County is unsure of their ownership, as the road is over a century old and was put in 1910 as a way to access mining and timber claims in the area during their heyday. According to Shoshone County Commissioner Mike Fitzgerald, the section of road in question is not claimed on the county's annual mileage reports, and the county only maintains Pine Creek Road to the Avery's property. This is where it gets sticky for all parties involved. If a road is not publicly owned and is also not privately owned, who determines what can and can't be done with it? As mentioned, the road does lead through several properties before landing in BLM territory, where they have designated land specifically for the use of rock crawling, extreme four-wheel drive activities, according to their most recent resource management plan, which contains the rules and regulations for all of the land under the purview of the BLM, as well as the maps that outline those rules and regulations. The only real restriction from that point is there is a seasonal break from August 25th through December 31st where motorized activities are paused. But the question remains, who gets to enforce what with the road, and how do people access the areas beyond if the roads are gated off? With this being the second time in a year that this situation has reared its head, Fitzgerald believes that the situation is only going to rectify itself through a legal process. Quote, in order to solve the issues here, we need to go through an official process, Fitzgerald said. The parties involved need to come in and determine the county's interest in the road. The parties that want the road open and would have to prove that in some capacity, three pieces of criteria have been met, even if it's ever so slight. That criteria is showing any bit of active maintenance, historical use, and county expenditures on the road. According to Shoshone County Public Works Director Jim Kaysen, the official maps that he has say the road after the Pine Creek Road ends all the way it forks into West Pine Creek Road and Middle Fork Pine Creek Road is labeled as unmaintained county road right-of-way or proposed federal management highway. It seems as though the answer may lie with the BLM, who as of press time could not be reached for comment. County officials did go on site and inform Avery on Monday that the gate he placed was on the county right-of-way, which meant it was placed illegally. They also told him that it was no longer allowed to be up in its current location. However, the Shoshone County Sheriff's Office is investigating the matter and has already identified an individual involved. The Shoshone News Press will continue to follow the story.
I'm excited to learn more, Josh.
I'm exhausted.
Sounds like this is going to be a long road.
Yeah.
Getting from there to here.
No.
It's been a long road. That's another Star Trek reference on the show.
Why?
What?
Why are you doing this?
Why not, Josh? Why not is the question.
So, and that's just the tip of the iceberg. Yep. I need people to understand.
Oh, it's going
to
be a big story on Friday.
There's going to be more to this, but to save you guys from like a 1,500 word monster.
I mean, it's coming.
I gave you the 650 word tip of the iceberg.
Right. All right, that moves us into What's Happening. What's Happening is brought to you by Watts Appliance and is providing incomparable customer service at the Silver Line for over 50 years. The family-owned and operated business has a wealth of knowledge regarding the appliances and the brands they sell. Whether you're in need of a new washing machine or have questions about refrigerators, Watts Appliance is ready to help. Visit wattsappliance.com or stop by and visit at 3 North Division Street in Pinehurst. Josh, what do we got?
We are going to stick with some sports for a little bit here, and we're going to go all the way back to the 80s, the golden age of Silver Valley sports. And headline, Kellogg beats Wallace 13-7. This was back when Kellogg and Wallace still played one another.
In football.
Mm-hmm. And so we've got a few names here we're going to drop. We're going to drop Kellogg Wildcat graduates Scott Martin, Eric Pankey. Pankey being one of the quarterbacks back when the Wildcats used to kick field goals after touchdowns on a regular basis. The Miners were actually led by Kirk Kelso and David Haar and Sam Tucker. Just kind of a crazy lineup of names. Barry Bircher, Davin Jennings, all of these guys. Wildcats ended up winning the game due to having a pretty solid passing game. But, you know, always fun we can look back at some of these. I'm going to take a look at one other one here. And the same edition, The Mullen Tigers edge the Kootenai Warriors in open. This is by Jim Fisher. The Mullen Tigers open their football season with a 21-19 home victory over the Kootenai Warriors in a game that saw Kootenai capitalize on a quick passing offense and Mullen moving the ball with a tough running drive. It was a sunny day, and in the second quarter, Mullen came on strong with a drive up the middle to Kootenai's line, ending with Brian Goslin carrying the ball into the Warrior end zone. The Tigers were led by quarterback Jeff Foster. So that would have been the brother of Mullen great Corey Foster, popular news press aficionado Corey Foster, his brother. In the final quarter, another long drive up the Kootenai middle paid off when a short pass to Drager scored the third Tiger touchdown of the day. The conversion was unsuccessful, made the score 21-13. And with just minutes left on the clock and Mullen fans thinking about leaving, they were pulled back into their seat when Rick Kroc, who is the father of JV girls basketball coach at Kellogg, Cody Kroc.
Okay.
He threw a touchdown pass and ran through sparsely guarded field is how it's described, to put the final score at 21-19. They had an attempt to go for two to tie it up, and it failed, and the Tigers hung on to win by two in their season opener.
Sounds like a good game.
I do enjoy when the local football scene is doing good.
It is exciting.
And we didn't have a sports wrap for you guys, but for you Silver Valley fans, your Kellogg Wildcats shut out St. Mary's 32-0, even though the people over in Coeur d'Alene picked the Wildcats to lose to St. Mary's. They responded with an emphatic shutout. And your Wallace Miners beat Kootenai 46-42, kind of a high-scoring game. Coeur d'Alene also lost to a much larger school from Utah. Lake City beat, who did Lake City beat? I can't remember. But, Lake City beat Lakeland.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, maybe
we don't have a sports wrap.
Maybe we can do another sports wrap one day. We'll get into that.
Yeah.
All right. If you're looking for a refreshing, locally made beer, check out Radio Brewing at 319 Main Street in Uptown Kellogg. The tap room is open 7 days a week. They offer delicious craft beer and awesome snack and food options. To learn more, visit radiobrewing.com. Radio Brewing, put radio in your mouth hole. That brings us up north to the Bonner County Daily Bee out of Sandpoint. Saturday, August 28th, headlines. Headline, City seeks input on local option tax plan. This is by Emily Bonsant. City officials are seeking input on a proposed 1% local option tax and how the funds should be used. A five-year local option tax was paid for improvements at War Memorial Field expired in December of 2020. The city's special revenue funds decreased by almost $1 million, which reflects the end of the lot, Sandpoint City Administrator Jennifer Stapleton said at a city council meeting in July. With the first phase complete, the tax expired. The second phase of the project will be completed by grant funding, officials said. There are many projects that could benefit from the 1% lot sales tax. Mayor Shelby Rongstad pointed to the projects in the Parks and Recreation Master Plan. Such projects as a sports complex at Centennial and Travers Park, the city could add more tennis and pickleball courts, a skate park, and field improvements, Rungstead said. The survey would prioritize if the city should buy the 32 acres at the Bald Fort Disc Golf Course, which has been allocated to the city's wastewater utility department. At one point, the treatment plant was going to move to the Baldy location, but after weighing the options, the city decided the current Lakeview plant location will still do, Rongstad said. Quote, to satisfy the ratepayers, I believe this is the most ethical choice, he said. The city could purchase the land and keep the disc golf course and use the land for their four trails and workforce housing. In future, there could be other land acquisition opportunities for the continuation of Sandpoint. Though, to those that may think that proposing a lot is, quote, tone-deaf during this time, Rungstad disagreed. All right, that moves us into Sunday, August 29th headlines. Josh, what do we got?
Advisories issued for SLU, Priest Lake Outlet. This is by the Daily Beast staff. Harmful algae blooms have been detected in the Chuck Slough and Priest Lake outlet areas. Panhandle Health District and the Idaho Department of Environmental Quality have issued public health advisories Friday for the two areas. At Priest Lake Outlet, the advisory includes the area from Outlet Bay Road to the dam. At the Chuck Slough, the algae is spread throughout the entire water body. PhD and DEQ are urging public to use caution when recreating in or near the water, especially where ingestion is a risk. Water quality monitoring confirmed the presence of cyanobacteria, which sounds a lot cooler than it actually is, also known as harmful algae bloom or blue-green algae. Bodies of water that have confirmed HABs are tested by DEQ every 1 to 3 weeks, depending on staff availability, to confirm that a harmful algae bloom is still present. Active harmful algae blooms are listed on the DEQ website and will be removed once bacteria levels reach a safe level. Caution should be taken anywhere the water appears discolored or murky, as HABs can spread or move with wind or water currents. Panhandle Health officials said in a press release that harmful algae blooms have the potential to produce dangerous toxins, especially when accumulated in high concentrations. The physical appearance of these blooms can be unsightly, often presenting in discolored water, streaks, globs of scum, or causing thick green mats along lake shorelines. Pets, children, the elderly, and people with compromised immune systems are most at risk for harmful exposure, officials said. Those recreating in any of the bodies of water are advised to take precautions to avoid exposure to lake water appearing to contain a hazardous harmful algae bloom. Private domestic water system owners utilizing the lake as drinking water source are cautioned that potentially present toxins cannot be removed by boiling or filtering the water, officials said. If contacted has been made with water containing a hazardous algae bloom, it is recommended to wash off with fresh water. Symptoms of exposure to algal toxins vary according to exposure. Symptoms include rashes, hives, diarrhea, vomiting, coughing, and or wheezing. More severe symptoms affecting the liver and nervous system may result from ingestion of water. If symptoms persist, consult with your healthcare provider. The public will be advised when the concern no longer exists. Many a friend have I seen lost a pet because they take them somewhere and just let them play in the water. And then they're like, and 2 days later, my dog was dead. And it's very sad, but it's not. More often than not, these places warn people of these harmful algae blooms, and people just are not paying attention. Mm-hmm. If the water's discolored or gross looking, don't take your pet into that water or your small child.
Fair enough. All right, moving on. Tuesday, August 30th headline. Judgment withheld in aggravated assault cases by Anissa Keith. A Spokane man received a withheld judgment Monday in connection to an aggravated assault charge. First District Judge Barbara Buchanan sentenced Stephen James Berrigan to 30 days in jail, followed by 2 years of supervised probation. Charges against Berrigan, 40, stem from a November 2019 incident in which he discharged a firearm in the midst of an argument toward three victims as they were fleeing in a vehicle. In a statement to sheriff's deputies, one victim said that she called a friend, Patrick Dexter Jr., to pick her up and a young child around 10:30 p.m. Patrick arrived at the scene to find the victim and the child hiding in the bushes behind the road. Allegedly, Berrigan quickly pulled up behind Dexter in his vehicle, loaded a black pistol, and pointed at him, nearly touching his face. She alleged Berrigan also pointed the pistol at her and the child during the altercation. As the three victims were fleeing in Dexter's car, Dexter told deputies that he saw the muzzle of the Berrigan's pistol flash in their direction. There were spent 10mm bullet casings found at the scene, according to a police affidavit. When later questioned by sheriff's deputies, Berrigan admitted that the altercation took place, but claimed Dexter was the aggressor. A Spokane resident, Berrigan admitted he owns firearms, but refused to specify what type they are. He also refused to return to Bonner County until a warrant was issued. A no-contact order was issued by the court in July of 2020, instructing Berrigan to stay away from the victims, which he violated 7 months later in December. Kootenai County Sheriff's deputies were called to the scene near Washington-Idaho border in Kootenai County by bystanders on July 16th after they saw Berrigan beating the female victim in the road. When deputies arrived, they discovered bystanders physically separating Berrigan from the victim. He was arrested at the scene. He signed a plea agreement in December, pleading guilty to violating a protection order and for careless driving. Berrigan was given a $500 fine and a 205-day sentence, 203 of them suspended. Berrigan is sentenced to 30 days in jail. In addition to jail time, Berrigan will participate in random alcohol screenings, outpatient therapy, counseling, and pay a $500 fine.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Sounds like a great guy.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Moving on to somebody who probably is a good guy.
Selkirk Fire announces a new chief. This is by Emily Bonsant, staff writer up there. New fire chief Gavin Gilcrease for Sandpoint, Westside, and Segal Fire Districts was sworn in on Monday. Gilcrease started fighting fires during the first Gulf War when he was with the Navy. He transitioned to a volunteer firefighter before starting his career in fire services. Gilcrease comes to the city from St. John, South Carolina, where he started in 1997 as a firefighter and worked his way up to assistant chief. The Selkirk Fire and Rescue and EMS position garnered over 20 qualified candidates, Sandpoint City Administrator Jennifer Stapleton said. Gilcrease was one of the four finalists who met or exceeded the preferred qualifications. City officials unanimously recommended Gilcrease for the position at a July City Council meeting. The council unanimously approved Gilcrease for the position. Gilcrease is just getting brought up to speed. The transition has been tricky from South Carolina to Idaho and learning the role when out of state. Right now, Hopkins and Gilcrease are pinning down projects that need to be done, recognizing that some systems are different, Gilcrease said. In the end, we still want, quote, sorry, this is a quote, in the end, we still want to get the trucks out the door to mitigate the incident. That's our job. That's what we're here for. Making sure everybody is taking care of safety and crews, getting everybody back home and everybody home safe, Gilcrease said. It is different coming to an organization like the one that covers Sandpoint, Westside, and Segal Fire Districts, because coming from a fire department and not a district, everything from payroll to HR was internal. Hopkins and Gilcrease said that Selkirk is a unique situation because it covers a city department and two fire districts. In essence, they say Selkirk covers three separate entities working together as one under the joint powers agreement. Gilcrease said having three departments under the same umbrella is more than helpful. In addition to keeping everyone on the same page, he said it ensures that employees receive the same benefits. Centralization of the three fire departments also ensures better accountability and stewardship of taxpayer dollars, he said. Quote, I think we, the departments, are positioned well to move forward. The departments want to show taxpayers where their money is going, the different fire service vehicles and personnel, Gilcrease said. Quote, that's how firefighters engage with the community and encourage community involvement. Gilcrease and his wife found Sandpoint by accident. They had planned to move to Montana, either to Missoula or Kalispell, where they have friends. It wasn't until he saw pictures of Lake Pendere that Gilcrease turned his eye towards Sandpoint. The fire chief position hits every mark for him, Gilcrease said, adding that he and his wife are looking forward to staying in Bonner County until the end of his career and hopefully retire there.
Well, that's nice.
Yes.
Congrats to him.
Yes, yes, yes.
He's on the gig. All right. Josh, that's it.
It was a lot.
It was a lot.
A lot of heavy news.
Yep, a lot of heavy news. A lot of stuff to talk about.
Well, once again, we'd like to thank the Silver Corner Bar for sponsoring this episode. While Wallace is known for the last working stoplight on I-90 between Seattle and Boston, it wasn't the only red light in town. Did you know that the historic Wallace famed Silver Corner Bar sits beneath an old brothel? Yep, the Lux Rooms Airbnb lets you step back in time and experience the history of a former bordello. This message was brought to you by the Wallace Women's Temperance Guild, fighting to rid Wallace of the evils of the drink, one minor at a time.
All right, everybody. Thanks again for listening in. We really appreciate it. Please like, comment, and share all of our stuff on social media. If you're interested in the stories we talked about today or the ones we did not, check us out at www.shoshonenewspress.com, coeurdaline.com, bonnercountydailyb.com, or thebonnishurryherald.com. If you listen to us on a podcatcher, please subscribe and or follow and or like us so you can get every episode as soon as it comes out. And we have a lot of special tabs coming out in various papers. I know the Coeur d'Alene Press put out a sports tab here recently. Shoshone News Press is putting out a sports tab here. Best Of is coming out here in Shoshone as well. So
yes.
Make sure to check out those print publications.
All right.
All right, everybody. Thanks again, and we'll see you on Friday.
Bye-bye.